Side on all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right, in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Saturday, May the 9th, 2026, year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, the ultimate Jedi warrior. And you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. All ye Gentiles of goodwill, hope you're all doing well. As promised, folks, we are joined by Stas once again. We had a few problems the other day trying to get him connected to the thing we use to put these programs together. Ran into some programs again. I don't think it's the Jews' fault. just in case anybody thinks that maybe the Jews were trying to keep him from coming on the program. I mean, maybe. We can't rule it out, but probably not. So anyway, he is back. He's back with us, folks. He caught a break with his work schedule and is going to give us his expertise. Actually, folks, to be honest, it's actually Friday the 8th, but we are recording this today. We'll put it up for everybody to listen to tomorrow. It's very possible that the news that will happen between the end of this program and tomorrow when the program gets posted will be, very explosive, folks, no pun intended. So if it doesn't show up in the discussion, you'll know why, because whatever is going to happen over the course of the next 24 hours, obviously neither Stas nor I are psychics or prophets or anything like that. So, but nevertheless, folks, even though we don't have a crystal ball to look into and to predict things that are headed our way with great precision, nevertheless, we can pretty much, all of us, folks, if we just bother to open our eyes and pay close attention to things that are happening right now, we can get a pretty good idea of what kind of weather is headed our way. No different than if suddenly the wind kicks up and you can see dark purple clouds blowing in and you can hear thunder off in the distance, you know that you're going to have a thunderstorm. And absent some miracle, folks, the geopolitical version of that is not just headed our way, it's almost on top of us. Now, I promised on the last program, folks, because we've been really heavy on philosophy and religion for the last week or so, that today is going to be purely political. And the heavy philosophical discussions that we've been having here, folks, they have to be had. We're not going to understand the political things that are happening right now, not the least of which is World War III and Armageddon, without understanding the philosophy behind all of it. Because we have a group of people, none of these things are happening by accident. Everything that's transpiring right now is because there is this group of people in the world, which we refer to here as this substratum of inhumanity, who are religiously and philosophically driven to set the entire planet on fire. And for those who say that that's not the case, that we're taking things way too far, I just want to read a couple of things that this substratum of inhumanity, the kinds of things that they take deeply to heart in informing out their geopolitical agenda. Okay. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples. Judah, meaning the tribe of Judah, will be besieged as well as Jerusalem. And on that day when all the nations of the earth gather against her, I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the Gentiles. And all who would heave it away will be severely injured. On that day, I will make the clans of Judah like a fire pot in a wood pile, like a flaming torch among the dry sheaves. They will consume all of the peoples around them, on the right and on the left, while the people of Jerusalem remain safe and secure. And on that day, I will set out to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. Okay. So, folks, everything that is unfolding in our world right now, in your world, in my world, not just tens of thousands of miles away, but really just right at our front doors, folks, it's all being driven by this substratum of inhumanity that takes these words that I just read to you and many others that I could, but I'm not going to spend too much time on that, takes them with deadly seriousness. They see themselves as divinely chosen to be that fire pot in a wood pile and amongst the dry sheaves, and that they set the peoples around them, all around them, on fire. So we have to understand the philosophy that's driving all of this, folks. And, you know, this is not an easy thing for us as Gentiles, because our brains don't function in the same way that their brains do. Okay? We don't believe that we have been built, we have been created for the purpose of setting the entire planet on fire. They do. And this is the reason why, folks, in addition to many others, that we spend the amount of time that we do on this humble little informational endeavor in studying the thought patterns that are driving these people. The last couple of programs, I've had to use, unfortunately, a very unpleasant set of comparisons in making the point of what we're dealing with here. We talked about dysentery. We talked about the sewage of Judaism, the sewage of the synagogue of Satan, as it reads in the Christian New Testament. Folks, really what we're dealing with here is we have to, you know, whereas understanding the Gentile brain means putting it, I guess it's called a CAT scan, you know, this is how you are able to look into the Gentile brain and to see what's going on in there. Whereas in understanding the Jewish brain, we have to engage in a colonoscopy. And I'm being serious here, folks. You know, this imagery that we've used for the last couple of programs about sewage and about dysentery and just the filth of Judaism, we're talking about, this is what we have to engage in, and it's really, really nasty business, folks. Okay, the people who have to perform these colonoscopies and go into the bowels of another human being and to see what's going on in there, that's essentially what we are called to do. It's not a pleasant thing, okay? But we're not going to understand our world today without doing that. And this is the reason why we spend as much time as we do examining how the Jewish brain functions in complete variance to that of the Gentile brain. Anyway, as I said, folks, we will be focusing on the politics of things today rather than the philosophy of things. But just, we ask you to take these things at heart. Unfortunately, folks, and maybe I'm wrong because I lead a sheltered life, so to speak, because I don't sit in front of the computer all day long listening to podcasts. Tucker Carlson's the only one really that I tune into anymore. Once in a while, some short little thing that Megyn Kelly puts together, and Redacted, I think that they're pretty good too. So I don't know who's saying what out there. I have to rely on my good friend Stas here to fill in the blanks for me. But according to him, and he does keep his ear pretty close to the ground in following who's saying what, nobody's having these discussions that we need to have about the philosophy that's driving all of this. They don't talk, they will talk about Zionism once in a while. Greater Israel will get mentioned, but to actually delve into the bowels of Jewish thinking and get a bird's eye view. Sorry, folks. I know this is really disgusting, but to get a bird's eye view of the trouble in which we find ourselves, according to Stas, this discussion's not taking place. And it has to, folks. It absolutely has to. We'll never understand it, and if we don't understand it, we will never be able to solve this problem, if indeed it can be solved simply by human hands. Anyway, folks, as I said, today is going to be political, and we have got lots of important sound bites that we are going to be listening to. The discussion, folks, I'll just go ahead and lay out the quick outline, the thesis of today's discussion. On 9/11, 2001, of course, everybody remembers the image of those two falling towers, right? As they sat there burning for, I don't know what it was, 45 minutes, something like that, and then the very dramatic collapse when these towers being brought down by carefully placed explosives by Israel's Mossad. We're witnessing the same thing today, folks. We are witnessing, of course, the destruction of the Middle East. Okay, that's one of the towers. Creative destruction, as the Jews would call it, as part of the process of redeeming, quote-unquote, the promised land that the Jews believe was given to them. And also the destruction of the West, principally America, and specifically Donald Trump. That's the second thing that's being taken down, folks, by this war in Iran. In setting up the discussion, folks, one of the things that I have noticed is that all of the yelling and the screeching and the grinding of teeth and growling and everything else, I haven't heard anybody, and I'm talking, I'm including in this, the personal discussions that I have had with friends of mine, people who aren't particularly favorable towards Israel, who aren't particularly favorable towards the Jews, but the blame for the war going on in Iran right now, they are dumping solely in the lap of the president without the name Benjamin Netanyahu entering into the discussion at all. That's a problem, folks, okay? That's a big problem when Donald Trump is the only one who is being given the blame for this, because clearly all of the pieces of the puzzle that have been given to us for a long time, but especially as of late, from people such as Tucker Carlson and the former director of the U.S. Counterterrorism Center, Joe Kent, and others, has made it very clear that Donald Trump is basically, he's being held hostage. All right, he is a president with a gun being held to his head. And yet, at least as far as yours truly can tell, folks, this issue of the Iran war being another war that the Jews have started and have dragged the United States into, somehow this is missing the notice of a lot of people. And on that note, folks, we are going to go ahead and bring up our good friend Stas, who is going to fill in the blanks for us on this. Stas, has my reading on this been correct or incorrect? Are people blaming Netanyahu, or are they blaming Trump?
They're absolutely blaming everything on the president because it feels good. It feels good to be on the side of the Jews and not be against them because they stay one way.
Mm-hmm.
The Gentiles go all over the place, and they place the entire thing on his lap as if it was his choice, as if he wanted to become hated and unpopular with an unpopular war. Because we know that when the Americans go to the gas pump, they don't blame Netanyahu, they don't blame Putin, they don't blame this guy, that guy. It always goes to the United States president, the feeling of hatred at the pump, which a lot of people depend on to do what they need to do every day. They got to drive around, and it's incredibly expensive now, and they're putting it all on Donald Trump. In particular, a guy who I like, a colonel, Douglas McGregor, totally heaping everything on Trump as if he had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And Kariaki's doing the best that he can because he can't put a bullseye on himself too much either, is trying to siphon off the information of why this really happened.
Meaning the former CIA officer, John Kiriakou.
Former CIA officer, John Kiriakou, an honest guy who went to jail, naming the crap that we pulled in the Middle East, illegal torture and everything. The silly war in Iraq, and now we're into it with Iran. And, you know, so they're getting a lot of fans. People are rooting, you know, actually rooting for the Iranians because we operate under the Israelis. We are, in fact, the evil empire. It's very weird. We're like the bad guys. I mean, we find ourselves rooting for Putin. We find ourselves rooting for Iran. Because we're doing the wrong stuff, because we're controlled by a certain thing, and that includes Donald J. Trump, who has to try to work with what he's got, and nobody's seen through it. They're all going after him. I mean, everyone, Mersenheimer, Douglas McGregor, they're all blaming President Trump, like they expected him to do everything out in the open, that he can't. He has to do everything, you know, with code words, and you know, and they want more from him. They want him to go in and again, and we're paying for it. Our bases are getting blasted by the Iranians' missiles, and Netanyahu wants more, and he openly wants more.
And Israeli missiles. Don't forget that. It's not just Iranian missiles, it's Israeli missiles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A bunch of false flags happening in between this, which you had told me off the air. I totally agree with what you were saying. The F-15s that went down near Kuwait, that totally was is the Israelis, you know. So it was a warning to the Americans: if you dare try not fighting for us, this is what's in store for you. We'll down your airplanes, make you look bad, make the American public scared. Oh, we got airplanes getting shot down. You know, they don't want to hear that. The public. It's always the same thing when we go into a fight. Is there going to be boots on the ground? Are you going to make my son and daughter go? No, we can do it with air power. You know, we'll do it with air power. And the Iranians have done nothing to the American people for 47 years. Every president has attacked them. Every publication has gone after them. They've done nothing, absolutely nothing. They had a legally elected Mossadegh. We threw him out. We put the Shah in. And they're always the demon, you know. It's always Iran. They're fighting fair and square. Soleimani was fighting fair and square, helping out Hezbollah. They're the only people in the world who've gone and shed blood to try to help the suffering people in Gaza. And we want to blast the heck out of them. And there's no way that Trump wanted to. Trump doesn't do well with the war thing. His base voted for him to keep your son and now daughter these days. You can have. That's what the public is up against now. You can have your daughter get drafted, you know, because of the crazy nonsense of this equality and all that stuff. And, you know, we just can't afford, this country cannot afford a war with Iran. And, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, and people know it's on the table for this. But the president clearly did not win, and you can see, and he's trying to end it every week. Ceasefire. He's trying. And every time he gets some peace going, the Israelis ruin it. They go and attack. That's not his fault. People must recall, they're the first ones to go in on him, starting a fight. And we've got to go back to when they bombed Qatar, who's our friend, embarrassing America, embarrassing the president. We look bad to the eyes of the world. A big, giant attack dog led by the nose by Benjamin Netanyahu, who clearly it's his dream to blow up everybody in Iran. If that's all he's been focused on for 50 years. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous. And everybody, you know, so, you know, I think it plays this way. It cuts this way. If you can give anything to the Jews when you have a radio show, they love it. So if they got an opportunity to blame Trump for something, they go for it and they keep blaming and they over blame him.
Mm-hmm.
So they get a couple of hundred less death threats to their podcast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they should know,
okay,
all that's left standing between us and complete oblivion is Donald Trump. We got to hope that this guy can make peace.
So well, let me play the devil's advocate here for just a second, Stas. There are people out there who would say and who do say Donald Trump is the president of the United States. He's the most powerful man in the world. Nobody tells him what to do. In fact, this is one of I just watched this interview between that horrible, horrible Jew, Alan Dershowitz, he was debating Joe Kent, and Alan Dershowitz was saying, nobody tells Trump what to do. He's the most powerful man in the world. He went to war in Iran not because Israel forced him to do it, but because this was in America's interest. Okay, so Stas, the argument that we hear all over the internet, all over the blabosphere, as I refer to it, that Donald Trump, as president of the United States, is the most powerful man in the world, and he could put an end to this war any moment that he wanted, is there any truth to that argument that is being put out there and really being used to just put enormous pressure on the president? Is there any truth to that statement, that he's the most powerful man in the world?
You've got to use nuance. The president is only as powerful as his followers are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And his followers are definitely the people who read Left Behind. They have a gun collection. They have a Bible collection.
I have a gun collection, but I don't have any Left Behind books.
You know, the Left Behind, like the end of Herb Sense with that Book of Revelation type of thing.
Yeah.
And those are that's sort of his core across the country. The Rust Belt, the Bible Belt, they like him. He's played to them very well, but he can't come out and say, I want to make peace with Iran and stuff to his base, because his base doesn't want that.
No, they believe, yeah.
Trump wants to kill the Iranians. They want to
because the Jewish God demands this, and that is the bottom line. But more important than that, Stas, and I think that this is the point that people really have got to start getting into their brains. Okay, they say it a lot of these pundits with their podcasts, they talk about the power that the Jews have and how no president can dare stand up to them. Well, okay, then what you all need to do out there, those of you with your podcasts and whatever, is that you need to listen to your own words, okay, and understand that the president is not a warmonger. He's not out to start World War III. Out of all the presidents that we've had in the last 20, 30 years, he is the least inclined to go to war. He's doing this because the alternative is worse. And on that note, Stas, I'm going to play a soundbite here that we're going to talk about here in just a second. And now let me just set up what we have here, folks. Earlier this week, Tucker Carlson had as a guest on his podcast Colonel Larry Wilkerson, who's a regular, I guess he is. I haven't seen him in a year because I haven't followed it, but he's a regular on Judge Napolitano's program. And there's a section there where Tucker Carlson, and by the way, folks, Wilkerson was Colin Powell, his chief of staff, when Colin Powell was Secretary of State under George W. Bush. Okay, and he's a career military man. He's been in Washington his entire life. So Tucker Carlson's asking, well, you know what? I'm just going to let you hear it for yourself.
What do you think? I mean, President Trump
didn't explain really why he began this war, other than to say Iran can't have a nuke, which is not an adequate explanation. What do you think the real motive was in starting a war with Iran?
I think that New York Times piece was probably fairly accurate. I think most of his advisors, the principal ones anyway, were saying no, or, you know, arguing negatively. And Netanyahu persuaded him to do it. Now, why did he listen to Netanyahu when everyone else, Vance, probably everyone but Hegseth, was at least somewhat opposed, if not strongly opposed, which I'm told, right, with some reliable information, that Cain was, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and others on the military. It was persuasive because Netanyahu said it, and I can't tell you whether it was Miriam Adelson's millions or Trump's. I don't think he's got a real high regard for Bibi Netanyahu in terms of loving him, but no. Something there told him, indicated to him, that he needed to go against all of his advisors and follow Netanyahu's recommended course of action, which, of course, I think is disastrous, and yet he did.
Okay, folks, so that was Colonel Larry Wilkerson on with Tucker Carlson, and he's talking about Netanyahu persuading Trump, despite the fact that Trump had everybody against all of his advisors, his vice president, his Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, head of the CIA. There's some question as to whether or not Hegseth was in support of it or not. But nevertheless, as Wilkerson makes clear, Netanyahu was the one whose opinion overrode everybody else's. Now, Colonel Wilkerson references this New York Times piece. And we're going to just read a few lines from that, folks. I dug up the piece itself. It was written back on April the 7th, okay, so just about literally a month ago today. And the title of it is How Trump Took the U.S. to War with Iran. Okay? Now, please note the title, folks. How Trump Took the U.S. to War with Iran. Not how Netanyahu took the U.S. to war with Iran, how Trump did. Okay. The subtitle, in a series of situations and meetings, President Trump weighed his instincts against the deep concerns of his vice president, a pessimistic intelligence assessment. Here's the inside story of how he made the fateful decision. The black SUV carrying Prime Minister Netanyahu arrived at the White House just before 11 a.m. on February 11th. The Israeli leader, who had been pressing for months for the United States to agree to a major assault on Iran, was whisked inside with little ceremony out of view of reporters, primed for one of the most high-stakes moments in his long career. U.S. and Israeli officials gathered first in the cabinet room adjacent to the Oval Office. Then Mr. Netanyahu headed downstairs for the main event, a highly classified presentation on Iran for President Trump and his team in the White House Situation Room, which was rarely used for in-person meetings with foreign leaders. Keep that in mind, folks. A highly classified presentation on Iran for President Trump by Benjamin Netanyahu in the Situation Room, which was rarely used for in-person meetings with foreign leaders. Now listen, folks, I want you all to get a picture in your mind of things as I read what the article says. President Trump sat down, not in his usual position at the head of the room's mahogany conference table. Instead, the president took a seat on one side, facing the large screens mounted along the wall opposite him. Mr. Netanyahu sat on the other side, directly opposite the president. Appearing on the screen behind the prime minister was David Barnea, the director of Mossad, Israel's foreign intelligence agency, as well as other high-ranking Israeli military officials. Arrayed visually behind Mr. Netanyahu, they created the image of a wartime leader surrounded by his team. Now, folks, again, you need to get in your mind a picture of the situation. They're in the Situation Room, which, as the news story itself makes very clear, is rarely used in meetings with foreign leaders, and yet Netanyahu's down there. The Situation Room, folks, is highly secured, okay? It was probably Netanyahu's insistence that they go down there so that what Netanyahu was going to tell Trump and the rest of Trump's team would not be picked up by any kind of electronic eavesdropping devices. Okay? So here's the president sitting at the table. In front of him is this big TV screen. Netanyahu's seated right in front of him. And on the TV screen, you have the head of Mossad and other high-ranking Israeli military officials. And they are... Well, folks, that's what we're going to talk about now. The news story says that they presented the case for attacking Iran and targeting the leadership for decapitation and how it was all going to be a smooth ride and all of the rest of that. But folks, again, as we counsel often on this program, we have to use our imaginations here. Okay, you'll recall back in 2012 when Netanyahu stood on the floor of the UN General Assembly and he held up this bomb cartoon, and he held it there and then was pointing at this bomb with his finger while directing a very threatening and menacing glare into the camera and to all of the world leaders who were assembled there. And sort of one guy in Idaho, folks, sorry, I wish I could say that it was more than just this one guy, short of one guy in Idaho, nobody else figured out what Netanyahu was doing that day, okay, holding up the bomb cartoon with this very menacing glare. And he basically, folks, was threatening the entire world, and especially the leaders of the entire world. If you don't give me what I want, which is Iran's destruction, then just as our prophecies say, we are going to become like a fire pot in a wood pile, like a flame amidst the drying sheaves. And we will set all of the peoples around us on the right and on the left on fire. Now, folks, likewise with this meeting that took place, that finally, quote unquote, convinced the president to initiate this war against Iran, the news piece here is very sterile in its description. But we are going to use our imaginations, and we're going to plug into this what we know about Benjamin Netanyahu and what we know about how Israel does things. And we're going to postulate some of the discussions that likely took place in that Situation Room that didn't make it into the news story. Stas, you just heard what I had to say reading from that news piece. What kind of discussions do you think were taking place on the part of Netanyahu and his team to the President of the United States?
It was Netanyahu threatening his counterparts with nuclear bombs all over
Absolutely.
The place. Not just Iran,
Absolutely.
But, you know, he actually, and one of the soundbites that you're probably going to play later, he actually names the city. And
yeah.
He's saying it's the Iranians, but it's him. It's
yeah.
Mafia style threatening the President. So he...
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's got to do. It's not even the Epstein files. It's the nuclear bomb thing. There's only one group that's crazy enough to use that technology. There's only one group that's used that. Oppenheimer and all those people invented that bomb, and they dropped it on the Japanese people, and now he's threatening to do it again. If you don't give me what I want and assist me to destroy Iran, I'm gonna do suitcase nukes at all these cities around the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, let's go ahead and play that. Let's go ahead and play that soundbite. Yeah. Let's play that soundbite that you just referenced. Hold on just a second. Here we go.
Iran is developing now ballistic missiles that are intercontinental ballistic missiles for 8,000-kilometer range. What does that mean? They add another 3,000 kilometers, and they've got under their atomic guns, the New York City in target, Washington, Boston, Miami, Mar-a-Lago. Okay? So that is a very great danger. You don't want to be under the nuclear gun of these people who are not necessarily rational and who chant death to America.
Okay, folks, so that was Benjamin Netanyahu in an interview with that horrible, horrible Jew, Ben Shapiro. And Netanyahu, I can't remember when this actually took place, a couple months ago, he and Ben Shapiro and Benjamin Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is basically laying it out. He's saying very coded language, which I'm sure the president understood. You know, New York City is going to get nuked. Washington, D.C. is going to get nuked. Boston's going to get nuked. Miami's going to get nuked. And then he adds Mar-a-Lago, okay, just to make it very personal. Now, people are doubtless, Stas, listening to this discussion that we're having, and we're saying, oh, you two guys don't know what you're talking about. You're reaching, you're putting things into this that that aren't there. Trump is just doing this because of Miriam Adelson's millions and blah, blah, blah. One more soundbite, Stas, and then we will discuss that which I just laid out here, and it's right here.
One of your advisors, David Sachs, said the other week that the U.S. should, quote, declare victory and get out of the Iran war. He also warned that if the conflict escalates, Israel may contemplate the use of a nuclear weapon. Has he shared that assessment with you?
No, yes. And Israel wouldn't do that. Israel would never do that. And, there's a theory. You've pounded them to hell, and you can just leave now, and it'll take 10 years for them to build back not nearly what they have right now. And I guess that's another theory. But we want to have it ended so that another president doesn't have... Look, for 47 years, no president was willing to do what I'm doing, and they should have done it a long time ago. It would have been a lot easier. There's no president that wanted to do it, and yet every president knew. I've spoken to a certain president, who I like, actually, a past president, former president. He said, I wish I did, but they didn't do it. I'm doing it. Yeah.
Okay, so, folks, this was a recent press conference where the topic of Israel using nuclear weapons is raised. Now, the president, he says, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah. But, folks, that's exactly what the president is afraid of. And how do we know this? Because we have it from none other than a former CIA officer, John Kiriakou, that Stas was referencing just a few moments ago, who said that according to him and the inside sources he has in the CIA, that this is exactly what pushed the president to attack Iran last June. Let's replay this soundbite.
I will say the one thing that I was really, really worried would lead to something terrible was when we decided to bomb Iran at the Israelis' behest.
Yeah. Now, why would we do that, John?
Well, there's a good reason why we would do it. Before it was done, I would have thought it was insanity.
Mm-hmm.
After it's been done, I think I've come to the conclusion that, all right, that wasn't so bad after all. Listen, every president, from when I joined the CIA, George H.W. Bush had just become president, the Israelis asked us to bomb Iran. Every single president, no matter who the prime minister of Israel happens to be, you got to bomb Iran. You got to bomb Iran. You got to bomb Iran. And every single president said, no, we're not bombing Iran. I remember a couple of times when Obama and Netanyahu got into shouting match. Yeah, that we didn't have an understanding or an appreciation of what an existential threat Iran was or a nuclear Iran was. You got to bomb Iran. You got to bomb Iran. We would never bomb Iran. Because our position was that would be the start of World War III. Because if we bomb Iran and maybe, you know, weakened the hold that the government has on the country, then the Chinese may have to come in or the Russians may have to come in. The reason, though, I'm told, that Donald Trump decided to bomb Iran was that the Israelis said for the first time, if you don't bomb Iran to take out these deep bunkers, we're going to use nuclear weapons. And they had never threatened that before. And so Trump said, bombing Iran might actually save us from the start of World War III if it keeps the Israelis from using nuclear weapons.
Okay, folks, so lots of sound bites there that we have to unpack. First of all, I'm going to ask my extremely competent co-host here, for the record, and in being fair to everybody out there, Stas, are any of these big name podcasters discussing the nuclear aspect to this? And by that, what I mean is the likelihood that the President of the United States is being blackmailed by Netanyahu with the use of nuclear weapons. Is anybody discussing this important facet of possibly why the president now is engaged in military actions against Iran?
Nobody picked up on this. They all repeat the same thing about this Marion Abelson woman. Does she some kind of Bengali of evil that controls everything? That Trump,
well, she is a Bengali of evil. She is a Bengali of evil.
But there's
something bigger and more dangerous than her millions, and that's Israel's nuclear weapons. Is anybody discussing this, Stas? Please don't let me down.
That nobody's picked it up. I think maybe even when they have him on, they talk about something else with Kariakou. Nobody's returned to it. He's probably pretty stunned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he winds up telling war stories of how he's tangled with the Iranians and stuff, you know, when he goes on about his life. But nobody went, wait a minute, Mr. Kariakou, are you saying that
the President of the United States was forced to engage in military actions against Iran against his wishes because the threat of nuclear weapons by Benjamin Netanyahu was tossed into the discussion. Right.
Right, right. Which still could happen because they've been conducting war operations typically in this theater on the weekends. So we're looking at the weekends coming up now. Unless my memory escapes me, we've been doing wars on the weekends. So they could any time now we could be, you know, browbeaten into doing the dirty work for the Israelis. And you know, and we're paying for it. Apparently the Iranians are shooting up the bases in the immediate area. And we're running out of ammo in case if we have to mix it up with China, we don't have enough ammunition or whatever. All for them. All for the Israelis, but everybody's looking at Trump. Trump is a bad guy. He lied to the Iranians. He went in there continually doing it. Nobody's given the idea, like he's the most powerful person who can call up Netanyahu, who runs the streets, who controls the Antifa, controls the Black Lives Matter. He's got his hands in the Democratic and Republican Party. The media is, you know, all around them, and you know, even the normal media sometimes has to tell these stories, horrific imagery of, you know, the IDF soldier taking a sledgehammer to Jesus Christ and, mm-hmm. and this and that. So even, you know, it's out there. People are saying it. But still, all these pundits put it all on Trump, that he could have said no, whatever. If he said right. no, they would have dropped a nuke on Tehran, and then Pakistan would have got in it, and this one would have got in on it, and they all would have joined in.
Yeah, absolutely. Which still could happen. In fact, it'll be a miracle if it doesn't. Now, this is an important point that you bring up here, Stas, where you talk about, you know, because this is what Kyriakou said. He said, you know, for the first time, well, he's asked, okay, so why did the president do it? And he said, well, there was a good reason for him to launch the attack against Iran. And then he goes into describing, you know, that he was told, or that every president before Trump was told by the Israelis, you have to bomb Iran, and they always said no. And the reason that they said no, according to Kyriakou, is because these previous presidents knew that it would lead to World War III. And he even mentions the Chinese and the Russians. Now, folks, again, China wouldn't engage in war against the United States because they love Iran, nor would the Russians engage in war against the United States, you know, World War III, because they love Iran. What Stas just laid out here is this domino effect that would happen. If a nuke were used over Iran, then Pakistan, nuclear-armed Pakistan, right next door, imagine that you are the Pakistani president, you are the Pakistani head of intelligence, or you are the Pakistani head of the military, and a nuclear weapon has just been used against the capital of an Islamic country right next door over the issue of them possibly acquiring nuclear weapons someday, and you're a nuclear-armed country, your thought processes lead you to one place, which is to conclude that you're next. If they're willing to nuke a country because they might get nuclear weapons, then what are they going to do to an Islamic country that already has them? And so now the Pakistanis are engaged. They've got their finger on the nuclear trigger. The Indians, who are right next door and who have been at war with the Pakistanis since 1947, and who also are nuclear armed, understand that now they have to worry about the Pakistanis launching nukes against them. So now they've got their finger on the nuclear trigger. The Chinese and the Indians, who have had they've had border scuffles in the past, and I think they still are over the issue of Tibet. The Chinese now have their finger on the nuclear trigger because they know that the Indians do. So this is the practical path by which nuclear World War III could take place. So what we're saying here, folks, in this very drawn-out manner, is that it's not simply an issue of Trump having betrayed MAGA, of him having betrayed his base. As John Kyriakou said, the president launched the war against Iran back in June because he saw this as the only way to avoid World War III. Stas, your thoughts on all of that?
That's exactly it, and it's what Kyriakou said. It's the threat of nuclear blackmail. It all goes every time, every show we do, always returns back to Michael Collins Piper denying JFK paid the price for denying the Israelis the bomb. Now that they have the bomb, they blackmail everybody into doing what they want. It's a mess that they have the bomb, and they are, and everybody knows they're crazy enough to use it. Mm-hmm. And Trump knows they're crazy enough to use it. So they've.
And how do they know it? And how do they know, Stas? And how do they know that they are crazy enough to do it?
Because they have already done it.
No.
Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they will
no.
do it again.
Yes, you're right. The operation in Japan was world Jewry telling the world, this is the power that we have in our hands now, and we will use this against you if you don't give us what we want. But on a more fundamental and existential level, Stas, think back to what I read earlier. The philosophy that drives these...
It's from their book.
Yes, their books. Their books, the Bible, their philosophy.
People worship that book. They don't worship Jesus. They don't love Jesus. They don't benefit from the love of Jesus Christ. They worship that book, which has a load of violence in it that has been used to do terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the case. It is Bibleolatry. And also worship of Israel rather than worship of Jesus happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But and then he personally threatened the president on Ben Shapiro's show. He goes Mer-a-Lago. Well, that's
yeah.
He names all of Trump's hangouts: New York, Washington, Mer-a-Lago,
yeah.
All places that Trump goes. It's a direct threat to the president all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing that, but yet. It's Trump's fault that he went in. I mean, they had to do something, and he's been to back up the president. He tries to immediately end it. He starts calling for a ceasefire the minute hostilities go.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants that, and the ceasefires get ruined by the Israelis.
Yep.
I mean, who in the world starts a fight with seven countries, and then we got to back them up?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have this bully. You know, it's like if you're at a party with your friend and your friend picks a fight with like seven guys, you know, that's what the Americans are dealing with. They're dealing with that kind of troublemaking. It's unbelievable. I can't even believe he's gone this far. And from the unpopularity of the stuff he has to do, his friends are going to lose in the midterms. He'll probably wind up getting impeached. He'll wind up getting stabbed in jail somewhere or something. That's what it's looking like now.
Absolutely, and that bullet brings us next to the next topic and the one that we began the program with, folks, which is that this war in Iran has two objectives to it. Number one, the destruction of all resistance to the Jews and what they plan to do in the Middle East. And number two, the destruction of Donald Trump's presidency. Okay, now I can hear all of you out there, all of you geniuses and geopolitical experts out there screaming at the computer saying, what are you talking about? The Jews love Trump. He's one of them. He's giving them everything they want. No, folks, they don't love Trump. They see Trump as the most dangerous human being since Jesus Christ. Okay. He is standing in their way for plans of greater Israel, of conquering the entire Middle East, and all of this business of making Jerusalem the capital of all affairs on this planet. Okay, with his talks of peace, Palestinian state. How many times, folks, have the Jews referred to the president as a modern-day pharaoh? And a modern-day Haman, meaning the ruler of Persia, who was hanged. And his sons, too, by the way, in that story. They need him out because they know what he will do if he is offered the opportunity. He's going to bring an end to all of this war, and they have to have this war. So what we're saying here, folks, is that this war, as unpopular as it is, that was what was baked into this from the beginning. The Jews said, this is how we will destroy him. We don't have to assassinate him like we tried to do on several occasions. We will turn his own base of support against him by forcing his hand into doing something which he promised throughout the campaign and on the day when he took his oath of office, his inaugural speech, that he wouldn't do, which was to start any new wars. This is as much rooted in the destruction of Donald Trump's presidency as it is the destruction of Iran. And as Stas just pointed out a few minutes ago, The midterms are just a few months away. They're already predicting a quote-unquote bloodbath, a complete reversal of the control of House and Senate. And Trump is going to be impeached and convicted within a month of the new Congress taking their oath of office, at which point the criminal convictions against him, that judge, anytime he wants, he can reverse his decision to let Trump remain free on his own recognizance and order him to prison without any protections for him whatsoever. And you, as Stas said, you're exactly right, Stas. He'll wind up getting knifed to death in prison.
Yeah, absolutely. And all these pundit guys are ganging up on the Goyim.
Exactly.
Leader.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All of these people, excuse me, including Tucker Carlson, who I admire greatly. Okay, I do. I admire him enormously. But he's playing into the hands of the Jews by heaping all of this pressure on the president. And I understand, you know, Tucker Carlson's in a very difficult corner as well. He can't sing the president's praises. But, Mr. Carlson, don't you think that a conversation like the one that just took place here a few minutes ago about the nuclear blackmail of the United States, don't you think that that is an important aspect in understanding and explaining what's going on right now? Stas, your thoughts?
Yeah, and he just was on not too long ago with Cariaco, and I'm surprised he didn't tell him to say three times, will you tell me what you told that other interviewer
about
that. You know, so you got the kind of war we're in, this intelligence war, and the expertise that we need to look at is Cariaco being a CIA officer. This is the type of war we're in. It's a behind the scenes fight. And, you know, and every time there's one of these assassination attempts, there's always some Jewish person there. You know, like at Charlie Kirk, there's a guy going, shoot me, arrest me. There's a magician doing his black magic weirdness next to Trump. And, you know, nobody looks at that. It's always Trump. Trump is bad. He's lying to the Iranians. And, you know, they're getting a lot of thing about the Iranians are beating up on the Israelis and Americans. I mean, some bases got shot up, but please, it's not going that way, you know.
Yeah.
The resistance or whatever. I mean, you know, you got tremendous, tremendous power militarily by the Americans used by the Israelis in this case. So, We the taxpayers pay for this expensive hardware, gigantic military spending, and it's not even protecting America. They're not guarding the border of America. We're not protecting American interests. We're spending trillions upon trillions bombing stuff at the Israelis. So why not be mad at them? Why are you going to get mad at Trump? I don't know. I guess that's how they get popular. You know, Trump is beat. Iran is kicking Trump's ass. I get it, but that's not how it's going down. We're beating up on Iran for the Israelis, and it's costing trillions. And we're going to lose all our power. You know, and I get it that we're the laughingstock of the international community. You know, doing stuff at Israel. Everybody knows it. So, you know, I don't know what, you know, the president's hands are tied. It looks like he's got to continue to do this until at some point maybe he's going to be forced to come clean. I don't know if that day will come, but, you know, thus far he's had to do what they say. Otherwise, he would suitcase nukes 5, 6, 7 American cities. It would make 9/11 look like a field day.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
In order to make us engage Iran deeper, bring back the draft. I mean, Netanyahu clearly, he doesn't just want a regime change. He wants to kill every Iranian person. That's all he thinks about. That's what he's been thinking about for years and years. And he's getting what he wants. through his persistence. And you know, unfortunately, he took a good president, a populist president, and maneuvered him in to this basically committing murder. And I don't think Trump likes it. Trump doesn't look good. He hasn't looked happy for a long time. He's very down looking to me.
Exhausted.
You know, he's
exhausted.
Yeah, he's exhausted. He's been made to kill people for somebody.
Yep. Yep.
You know, imagine what that feels like. You got to go to bed.
Yeah,
at night
he's watching. He's watching all of his work ever since inauguration day of last year go up in smoke. Gaza, Syria, all of his plans for everything have just literally been bombed into oblivion. And this is a conversation he can't have with the American people. Not yet. So where are we going with this, folks? Well,
too. Bombing girls' schools.
Yep.
I mean, it's horrendous, horrific pressure on the guy that, you know, basically it's like, somebody's got a gun on you, and they hand you a knife and go kill that kid for me. That's basically what Trump is going through every day.
Exactly.
But no, they're
yep.
like, no, it's his fault. You know, the guy's a billionaire, and they're like, Marion Anderson gave him $200 million. Who cares, you know? They keep repeating
Well, the bottom line, Stas, is that as much as everybody is emotionally driven to do this, you have to understand, folks, that you're slitting your own throats. If you're adding your voices out there against the president and you're not factoring into this, I mean, fine, if you want to complain, say we're in another goddamn war that the goddamn Jews have dragged us into, fine. But make it about Netanyahu. Make it about nuclear blackmail. Instead of, oh, he broke his promises, he betrayed the base. It's much worse than that, folks. And again, as much as it may sound like I'm chiding all of you out there, I'm only saying this because I've heard it with my own ears in personal conversations that I've had with people, who, as I said earlier, are not particularly fond of the Jews, not fond of Israel, not fond of Netanyahu, but they have reserved all of their wrath, all of their disappointment, and everything else for the president without factoring into their understanding the fact that he has a nuclear-tipped gun being held to his head. Stas, we are just about at the end of the program here. I think we hit a grand slam, if I may be modest enough to say that. I think that we hit it out of the park here. How much good it'll do, I don't know. I'm not particularly hopeful. Nevertheless...
Yeah, quite frankly, I think people hear this and go, these guys are crazy. They don't understand Trump is, you know, is in bed with Netanyahu. I mean, and what's he getting for it?
Yeah, what's he getting?
Losing money? I mean, you know...
No, Stas, it's worse than that. It's more personal than that. It's what you just said a few minutes ago. He'll wind up getting impeached. He'll wind up getting... convicted. He'll wind up getting thrown out of office and thrown into jail where he's going to take a screwdriver to one of his kidneys.
Yeah. They're going to one of those crazy, politically correct, George Soros-backed judges will put him in jail in New York or something for some trumped-up phony charge. And yeah, it's going to be embarrassing. We're going to have our world leader, you know, knifed in a prison like a gang member.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all because nobody could understand what the guy was saying between the lines, the reason why he got into that war. Trump doesn't like war at all anyway. That
mm-hmm.
Bob Woodward revealed that in a book that he wrote about Trump in 2016, 2017. He actually criticized Trump for the fact that Trump doesn't like casualties.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying it's a weakness. Basically, Bob Woodward in his Jewishness was saying, hey, Goy King, kill Goyim for us, pal. He was making that a bad thing, that Trump doesn't like to see the boys come home in the caskets and so forth. I took it as a good thing. Bob Woodward took it as a bad thing. So people, you know, the Goyim, the Gentiles, have to start know who they are. They got to be cognizant of who you are. You're a Gentile. There's a derogatory swear word, mean slang word for you, that you're a goy cattle, and that's what you are. And then people got to start looking at that that way. They're not equals because they look at the book of Revelation. We are inferior to them in their minds, and people got to start looking at that way.
Not only do they see us in an inferior way, they plan to kill all of us. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
It's one thing for somebody to use a derogatory term in describing you, but it's another thing when this person's planning later on to kill you and eat you. Anyway, Stas, that's it for today.
Yeah.
Our eternal thanks for your, well, brilliant, we'll just have to use, that's the only word that really fits, brilliant analysis on all of this. Welcome back to the program. Hopefully your work schedule will lighten up to the point where we can do this on a more regular basis. Hang on there for just a second. I'm going to close out, but I want to talk to you up here. Okay, folks, so that was the one and only irreplaceable Stas. Great to have him back for what was, I think, in my opinion, was a fantastic conversation. Conversations like that that should be taking place everywhere, folks. Everywhere. And unfortunately are not. Anyway, as I said, folks, we're going to try to get in here at least twice, three times a week. While we have time to do this, we just don't know what tomorrow will bring. We don't know what the next 5 minutes will bring, whether we'll be able to have these kinds of conversations or not. But until that time, please take everything that you just heard seriously, folks. And don't waste what little political capital we have left in our arsenal by going out and doing things which the Jews want us to do. All of the political pressure being brought against the president in order to flip Congress and to get him removed from office is only being brought closer to possibility and to fruition by us doing the very thing which we shouldn't be doing, which is cooperating with this plan of extermination against us. Anyway, that's it for today, folks, on this Saturday, May the 9th, 2026 edition of the Ugly Truth Broadcast. Till we meet again, folks, stay safe, stay strong, and keep the faith.